Welcome back to For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with us for the second hour, folks. Tonight, we are going to switch gears a little bit and have another very important conversation as we are acknowledging National Infertility Awareness Week. Yes. And here to give us some insight about this is Ms. Barbara Culera, who serves as the president and CEO of Resolve, which is the National Infertility Association. She is a nationally recognized expert on infertility and the family building journey, with a special emphasis on the personal experience of those struggling to build their family. She has worked with the World Health Organization on infertility definitions and clinical guidelines, and served a four-year term on the advisory council of the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development at the National Institute of Health. And we are just happy to have her expertise and for her to be a part of this important conversation tonight, Ms. Barbara Culera. Barbara, thank you so much for checking in and being a part of this discussion tonight, and we appreciate it.
Well, you're so welcome, but I want to thank you for just talking about this topic and helping educate your listeners and raising awareness. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in a few moments, we will be joined by another young lady, Ms. Andrea Jones, who is the reason, there's one of the big reasons why we're having this conversation, because she said, Faraji, the National Infertility Week is coming up, and we need to have some real conversations about it, especially about its impact on Black women. And so I said, absolutely, let's make it happen. So Ms. Andrea Jones from Inspire will be joining us in a few minutes live in studio. But Barbara, I want to start the conversation off with you, ma'am, because I want to first put out some numbers about infertility. 1 in 8 couples, or 12% of married women, have trouble getting pregnant or sustaining a pregnancy. They also say that 7.4 million women, or about 12% of women, have ever received an infertility services in their lifetime. When it comes to African American women, according to the National Survey of Family Growth between 2006 and 2010, non-Hispanic Black married women were 1.8 times more likely to have infertility than Hispanic or non-Hispanic white women. And then, according to Dr. Desiree McCarthy-Keith, a reproductive endocrinologist at Georgia Reproductive Specialist, her research shows that among the 7.3 million women in the United States, approximately 11.5% of Black women experience a variety of infertility problems compared to 7% of white women. Talk to us about this, Barbara. This seems like some very, very disparaging and stark data that we have here when we talk about infertility. But that's just the numbers. Give us a little bit more of the human side of this issue.
Well, you know, when you read those numbers, it's very sobering. And you're probably sitting there thinking to yourself, wow, if it's 1 in 8 couples of reproductive age, heck, I know that many people, and no one's talking about it to me, and I haven't heard people talking about it. And that's really the core of the issue, is that an infertility diagnosis is devastating to anyone. People feel very alone and very isolated. This is one of those kind of taboo topics. It involves sex, it involves reproduction, people are going to, what are people going to say to you? Are they going to say, well, what did you do? You know, is this something you did? Or maybe you're not doing it right? Or, you know, there's all kinds of really insensitive things that people say. And so it's just one of those things where you're not going to talk about it. You're not going to share. You feel stigmatized. And so now you're dealing with this really devastating diagnosis, and you're alone, and you're not out there, you know, posting it on Facebook and sharing it with your friends because it's really hard. And so it becomes that emotional layer on top of the physical diagnosis. And, you know, hopefully we'll talk a little bit about the cost and the access issues. It all adds up to being one of the most stressful and, you know, life-altering experiences for many of us who have that diagnosis.
So I was reading, there was another statistic, Barbara, that I think that we should kind of keep in mind. This was coming out of a survey that was just recently done with Oprah Magazine and Women's Health. And in this particular survey, they said, even though you have about 12%, let me make sure I pull it up here. They said black women, even though black women may be almost twice as likely to experience infertility as white women, yet only about 8% of black women between the ages of 25 and 44 seek medical help to get pregnant, compared to 15% of white women. So when you're talking about this stigma, the stigma is very real. But then to take the next step to not stay in that place of feeling shame or feeling hopeless to get medical treatment, how come that issue, how come that number is so low?
Well, there's also data that I was looking at in preparation for tonight, and I had forgotten how stark this was. It was the amount of time till you sought help, right? So it's from when you're starting to trying to get pregnant and it's not working, how much time do you let go by before you're actually getting the right help you need? And African American women, it was a year longer than Caucasian women. So to your point, there are fewer getting to help, and then those that do, they're waiting far longer. So we have got a host of issues going on here. First of all, infertility is not recognized as a disease by insurers, and it is not viewed as something that should be covered. And so those of us that have access to employer-provided health insurance that we may think is pretty good, most of us don't. It excludes coverage for things like IVF, and so you're having to pay out of pocket.
Since we're talking about costs, what are the numbers? How much does what does that look like?
Well, if you're gonna have to do IVF, which not everyone does, but if you go that far, you're looking at anywhere from $12,000 to $15,000 to $20,000.
Oh my God! And the IVF, for those who don't know, is in vitro fertilization, correct?
Correct. And so you're taking sperm and egg, and you are putting them together in a laboratory, and you are taking the embryo that results from that after a few days, and you're going to transfer that embryo into a woman's uterus. You don't know if that embryo is going to implant or not, but you wait a couple of weeks and you see if there's a live birth, if there's a pregnancy. And then, of course, you have to go through the 9 months of pregnancy. So it's highly sophisticated. It has to be done in a special facility by a specialist. They have to have this special kind of lab. So it becomes really out of reach for a lot of people. And if you're covered by the military, if you're a federal employee, none of those folks have coverage for IVF. And so you start layering on the cost to this. And so now you're hit with this diagnosis, and you're not talking about it. You're not sharing about it. You're feeling all alone. And then you're told you might need IVF, and oh, by the way, you don't have coverage for it.
Wow. And that's from, and you're talking about $12,000 to $20,000 out of pocket.
For one cycle.
For one, and how many, I guess, what's the proper way to look at it? Is it one procedure, or how many procedures or cycles would a person have to, would a woman have to go through?
So if they are creating those embryos and transferring them back, that's considered a cycle. Sometimes they freeze the embryos, and they might do that transfer to the uterus later with when they take the embryo and then they thaw it. So typically, physicians say, when you go into doing IVF, plan to do three cycles.
So you're talking about, wait a minute, let me make sure that I'm trying to make sure I'm carrying the one on his math here, Barbara. So you're talking about $12,000 to $20,000 for each cycle, three cycles. You could potentially pay up to $60,000.
Correct.
And that's out of pocket without any in coverage from your insurance.
Correct.
That is absolutely mind blowing. You've been dealing with this, or at least been addressing this issue for many, many years. Why are we still in this place? Considering all of the science, the technology that we currently have, how come this has not been addressed, at least from a legislative or policy level? And how are we still in this place where we see the data, we know that this is a real issue, but yet there doesn't seem to be any real movement on this issue?
Well, that's a $64 million question, because I get calls like that every single day. You know, people don't know that Resolve's been around for over 40 years doing this. They just found out today or yesterday that they're going to have trouble having a baby. And they call us up and they're like, what have you all been doing? Because I don't have any insurance and no one seems to be talking about this and what is going on. And so this is something that is really been at the core of kind of who we are at the organization that I'm at Resolve. Look, I think a lot of the reason, to answer your question, is because as a community, as those of us who are going through this, we haven't had that activism, that advocacy of raising our voice. I mean, you look at things like if you've got breast cancer and they need to do reconstructive surgery, mm-hmm. That reconstructive surgery is completely covered by insurance. And you know why?
Why?
Because women who had breast cancer were told that it wasn't covered, and they got pissed off, and they raised their voices, and they advocated. They advocated to Congress, they advocated to their state legislators, but they advocated to their employers, and they said, this isn't right. And now we have that coverage.
Gotcha.
And so that's what's been lacking in our community. Think about that shame and that stigma. You think those people are going to come to Washington and advocate? We do that. We have a big Hill Day in Washington in May, and I get a couple hundred people, which is shocking. I mean, that's a lot of people.
When you say a couple hundred, are we talking about 200?
We're talking about I get about 225 people.
Wow.
And they come from all over the country. And
that's a big number for you guys considering this issue.
It's a huge number considering this issue. But I need that day in and day out. You know, I need people getting kind of pissed off and saying this isn't right. And how do I make this right? And so like you said, I've been at this a long time. I've just noticed even in the last couple of years a more positive shift to people's talking about it, sharing. Social media helps.
Yeah.
But they're more willing to, even shows like this, it's more, you're normalizing it and you're realizing, oh my gosh, this is not so unusual. And I have an opportunity to perhaps change the situation, and I can use my voice to do that.
Mm. I want to, and folks, if you're just tuning in to For the Culture here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. We have been talking to Ms. Barbara Colera, who serves as the president and CEO of Resolve, the National Infertility Association, as we're recognizing National Infertility Awareness Week. And we're looking at this issue of infertility and its impact on Black women, but all women, of course, and looking at how do we get to move the needle on this situation. I want to bring into the conversation Ms. Andrea Jones, who is the author of Carrying It All, to talk to us about her personal story. And she was really the real reason why we're having this conversation, because I didn't know. And I'm so glad that Andrea brought it to my attention that there was an awareness week, that there was a need for us to talk about this. And it seems like there needs to be a huge discussion about this, as Black women are twice as more likely to be impacted by infertility. But then they are, ladies, you are less likely to have conversations about it, let alone go get help for it. So we want to break through the stigma, through the hopelessness, through the despair, through the loneliness of it all, and have this conversation. Plus, I want to open up the phone lines right now for you to join us. 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Ms. Andrea Jones, author of the book Carrying It All. Andrea, thank you so much for being on For the Culture here on WEAA.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Faraja.
Absolutely. Andrea, let's talk about... first, why this issue is important to you as a young woman, because you've been doing youth work here in the city of Baltimore for many years through your organization, Inspire. But now you want to look at, you came to me and was like, Faraji, we need to talk about this. Why is this important for you?
It's important for me and to me. So I've just realized as I get older, more and more people are just prone to asking these questions of, why don't you have kids yet? When are you going to start having kids? I think, Faraj, you may have asked me once or twice.
I didn't know. I would never. You know what?
No, I'm joking.
Real talk. Like, I don't even ask questions like that. Because that's a very sensitive question. So you can't automatically assume that if a woman is a young woman, she's young.
Or man.
Exactly. Thank you. So you can't automatically assume that, oh, okay, so why don't you have children?
But people do. So as I've gotten older, just more people have asked that. Now that I'm, on the smooth 30 mark, it comes up more often in conversation. And then in addition to just my experiences with it, learning that I have had, and I say learning, I'll explain that another time. We'll talk offline. Learning that I've had 3 miscarriages was automatically put me in that realm of infertility.
Mm.
So knowing that, I was kind of like, oh, well, I wonder how many other women have struggled with miscarriages or infertility as a whole. And so many of us are silent about it because it makes other people uncomfortable. It's not a comfortable topic for us, but for other people to make you uncomfortable about being open about it is a little...
Does it add salt to the wound?
It does. Okay. Because if I'm comfortable with talking about it, I just need you to be comfortable listening. Everything isn't for you.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. So, and I mean, you are sharing your story, 3 miscarriages.
Mm-hmm.
And how have you been able to get through those experiences?
I don't think that I was up until last year. I didn't realize that I never really dealt with mine until last year when I learned that a procedure that I got, well, thought I got done, actually was a miscarriage before the procedure even happened. So...
Mm-hmm.
So after learning that, it was kind of like, oh, wait a minute. This is like a whole downward spiral that I didn't realize. I never addressed the first 2. I never addressed the ones that I knew that I had. So in doing that, it was kind of like, all right, I know it's got to be hundreds of thousands of other women who have not dealt with it, who just kind of put it in a box and throw it away, or... We cover it with going back to work, or cover it with being the wife or being the girlfriend or being there for the kids that we already have. We just kind of tuck it away. We don't deal with it. It's kind of like, because no one wants to talk about it, let's not deal with it. Let's just act like it never happened. And they suffer in silence because they have those triggers. They have those reminders, and they have to deal with those things in privacy and in secrecy. And I just realized that I just never even processed mine. I just kind of went back to work or joined the military. So it was kind of, okay, let me cover it with something else. Let me get busy doing something else.
Barbara, I want to bring you back into the conversation. Again, folks, if you're just tuning in tonight, we're talking to Barbara Calera, the president and CEO of Resolve, the National Infertility Association, and Ms. Andrea Jones, author of the book Carrying It All. But Barbara, I want to get your thoughts on that, because Andrea described going through a downward spiral, putting it away in the box. What is the best course of action that a woman should take if she experienced one miscarriage or she's having these experiences? How should she handle it?
Yeah, and Andrea, I'm so sorry that you had to go through that, and so appreciate you writing a book and really putting yourself out there, because that obviously helps and brings awareness. So I think there's a couple of things that I say and advise to people. Getting pregnant and having, you know, that first miscarriage, at that point you're not necessarily infertile. And you are, you know, quite honestly, 20% of pregnancies result in a miscarriage. It's very high, especially for first pregnancies. So it's as you're saying, it's not unusual. It's the multiple miscarriages that is what is so incredibly devastating. And so what we recommend is to take this seriously from a mental health perspective. And, you know, check in with yourself, you know, if you've had a miscarriage and you're proceeding forward with trying to get pregnant again, that is where you need to really check in with yourself. Seek professional help if you're at all feeling like, you know what, I'm not feeling myself. I'm not feeling like I'm able to hold it all together. Certainly if you've had two miscarriages, it would be a very wise thing to seek professional help, mental health help. If you are diagnosed with infertility, so maybe not necessarily on the miscarriage end, but you have something else either with your partner or with yourself that's causing you to not be able to get pregnant, I cannot stress how important it is to get support. You can do that, again, through a professional, through a mental health professional. You can do it through a support group that might be online, that might be actually in person. But look, this is a serious diagnosis. And as Andrea said, we don't give it, I say the respect, we don't give it the attention that it deserves. And it gets stuffed down in you. And like what's happened to me and happened to so many other people, you feel like you can handle it. And then it all comes crashing in. So treat it seriously and don't brush it off.
When we come back, folks, we got to take our final break for tonight. But when we come back, I'm going to ask Barbara and Andrea, what are the best ways that the family, particularly the men, can be supportive of any woman that experiences this? Especially for those couples who have been trying and trying and it doesn't seem to be working out, you know, what's the best course of action that men can be a part of? Because I think that's the other part about this, Andrea. I don't think that we as men truly understand the, and I think Barbara said it so well, the mental impact.
But it goes both ways, Roger. Right. Don't forget that. So I think a lot of times we often forget about the male partner, period.
Right.
So we're worried about the women, but we don't process that men also struggle with infertility and they also deal with the loss as well.
So we gotta talk about that. Yeah. We definitely talk about. Folks, we're going to take a final break. When we come back, more about National Infertility Awareness Week. We want you to join us in this conversation. I know it's very hard. I know it's very sensitive, but it's so, so necessary. So give us a call at 410-319-8888. Again, that number is 410-319-8888. Stay riding with us, folks. Whole lot coming up in the final 30 of For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. We'll be right back.
I do this for my culture.
Welcome back to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely, the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me, folks. We are continuing our conversation as this week is National Infertility Awareness Week, folks. And this is an opportunity, I think, that for us to have some very, very hard conversations about a very real issue. This is also something that we can kind of start to push the needle on as well. And I've been talking to some experts right now. We have Barbara Calera, who serves as the president and CEO of Resolve, on the line with us. And then we have Ms. Jones, who is the author of the book, Carrying It All, as well as Inspired.
Wait, I just processed, Barbara. I actually was looking into Resolve. They're looking for ambassadors, so I was actually going to contact them anyway.
Oh, then you were going to talk to Barbara about being an ambassador?
Yeah, they're looking for ambassadors. They're always looking for ambassadors. But I was just on their website recently. That's crazy.
Okay,
I just processed that.
We would love that. We would love that.
I was just a little slow. I was like, wait a minute. Okay.
That's right, folks. We have great conversations and get people jobs. So thank you so much. Yes, we can make sure that happens.
Thank you.
So we want to get back to the phone lines, 410-319-8888, to have this very, very important conversation. And I think the big thing, and I'm going to start with this with you, Andrea, in terms of the role of the man in this process. You talked about the partner. Mm-hmm. And you said we must not forget about the men, because men are impacted by this issue as well. What have you seen from either your personal experience or just in general as how most men tend to handle this?
I'm not going to say most. I'm going to say some. I've seen various people's reactions or lack thereof.
Okay.
Some men, from my conversations with different women, some men remove themselves emotionally from their partner, like directly. Mm. Or they deal with it by themselves.
Yeah.
Some are more impacted. For me, I felt like my partner was more impacted than I was initially during the first miscarriage. I felt like he was hurt more than I was. I didn't quite process it all. And just like Barbara said, that first one, you're kind of like, oh, okay, it happens. But I was young, the first one. So the first one, I think I was like 19. So I didn't quite process it too much.
Yeah.
He was more hurt. He was a little older, so he was more upset by it. And then I realized, like, okay, I didn't process it. But some remove themselves from their partner emotionally. Some deal with it well with their partner.
The partner you had when you were 19, did you ever have a conversation about it?
I don't think that we did. And I think that's the biggest issue that negatively impacts that relationship. Mm. If you all don't deal with it together, it's okay to deal with it separately, but also remember to deal with it together in order for the relationship to stay afloat.
Sure.
If you deal with it individually and not together at all, the relationship is going to suffer because you all are both hurting in different ways, and that's fine, but you're not communicating effectively to better each other, to piggyback off of each other's feelings, to understand how he feels and she feels. And I think that's the biggest issue within the entire thing.
Hmm. Barbara?
Well, we've done some work on the male side of this, and you know, one of the biggest myths, first of all, is that infertility is a women's issue, and about 30% of infertility is caused by issues with the man. About 30% is issues with the woman, and the remaining is a combination of both or unexplained.
So, I'm sorry. Let me say, I want to make sure that folks really process that. 30% is issues with the man, 30% is issues with the woman, and so you're talking about 40% is still unexplained. So really, the man...
Unexplained or a combination of both.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But really, it's just as much on the man as it is the woman.
Yes.
Ah, now I don't think a lot of people, I mean, I personally didn't know that, so I don't think a lot of people know that.
Because the woman feels as if I was the one carrying, so it's my fault.
Right.
So that was the first part of my book. One of the first journal entries is writing a letter of forgiveness to yourself because it's not your fault. So you have to forgive yourself. Mm. And so we feel like because we were carrying that it's 90% our fault. Probably 100%. But, you know, it's a big percentage that we take the blame for.
Sure, sure. So, Barbara, you mentioned that you've seen the research. So what has that research, what did you glean from that research as a result of that study?
So even if it is a what they call male factor infertility, the guy is not going online looking for medical information. He's not making appointments with the physician to get himself checked out. He is not availing himself of any other kind of resources. You know, we have support groups, hundreds of them, all over the country. We do not have a single one that is male only. We have some where the guys come with the women, but I even did a focus group, and I was doing one-on-one interviews with couples, and I couldn't even get the guys to come on the phone and answer some questions. I mean, it is astounding that there is just this shut down from the guys on this entire process. And so think about it. It's even more difficult for them to try and support their partner in this. When I talked earlier about seeking mental health support, what mental health professionals tell me, and I have to laugh because this happened to my husband and I, the man and the woman are almost never in the same place at the same time. And Andrea just exactly said that, where, you know, her partner was really upset and she wasn't necessarily showing it. But even if you're going through this journey and maybe you're having to do IVF or you're going through a lot of diagnostic tests, the guys are processing it so much differently and they're in a different place emotionally than the woman. And that just compounds the whole dynamic of this diagnosis. It's not just you. You get a cancer diagnosis, you get diabetes, it's you. It's not somebody else and you. So this is so unique in how we process it.
That's a good point. That's an excellent point. And I want to go to the phone lines since folks are checking in, which I'm so happy to hear. 410-319-8888 as we talk about National Infertility Awareness Week happening all this week. You can certainly check out Resolve to go to their website to get all of the latest information about what's going to be happening this week and just in general about this whole situation. And then, of course, carryingitall.com for Miss Andrea Jones, who can give you some insight about her journey and how she has been dealing with this as well. Let's go to the phone lines, 410-319-8888. Phyllis, out of Pikesville, thank you so much for checking in, Phyllis. What's your question and your comment?
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
And I just want to say thank you to your panel guests, because this issue is so important for us, not just as black women, but as women, but particularly as black women, to talk about and hear talked about on the radio and in the media and places like that, because it really does affect us. And I think a lot of times, too often, we do suffer in silence. I want to just give you a couple of quick concerns that I have. And one of them is I sort of suffered with this situation a little over a decade ago when I was about 32 years old, and I was, you know, not thinking about having a baby or getting pregnant. I wasn't married or anything at the time, but I was told by my GYN that I had endometriosis, and if I ever thought about having a family, that now would be the time for me to try to get pregnant because I could become infertile as a result of it. And literally, that's all he had to say to me. And it was the wrong way to go about having a baby first and then the marriage later. But I thought that that was something I needed to try to make sure that I could have a family. And so I did that, and literally maybe less than 6 months later, I conceived. I had my son. He's now 25 mm-hmm. years old. But mm-hmm. when he was around 10 or 11, we wanted to have a second one, and I couldn't.
Mm.
And, you know, it was devastating for both of us. And, you know, we did go to the doctor, and they said that nothing was wrong with either one of us, but we just couldn't have any more. And at that point, I was approaching my 40th birthday, and, you know, the stigma around having babies so late in life. So, but again, it wasn't so much that I decided not to. I couldn't get pregnant anymore, and that was very devastating for me. My second point that I really thank you to women for, because my goddaughter is now the age I was then. She's 32, and she is having infertility issues, and she is married, and she has had 3 miscarriages that I'm not supposed to know about because she was too ashamed to tell me. Her mother told me, and I want to help her process this. I am a mental health therapist by trade, but I don't want to divulge my girlfriend's confidence by letting her know, my goddaughter know, that her mother told me that she's having infertility issues, but she just went through in vitro fertilization and it didn't take. And so, again, she's devastated. I know how she feels. I thank you guys for the tips that you gave us, you know, writing a letter of forgiveness. And please, if I've gotten that wrong, please say it again. And, of course, seeking the mental health support, which is what I want to share with her. But I don't even know how to approach her because she doesn't want anybody to know. And so, one, I want to thank you. And I'll just take your comments off the air.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Either Barbara or either one of you, if you want to jump in and provide any recommendations that Phyllis or may be able to use.
Andrea, why don't you go first?
I think that's a tough one because she found out through her mother.
Yeah.
So for me, I would probably give the advice to mom and let mom give it to, hey, you want to talk to your godmother that way? But there may be something that it's shameful. It does become to a part that you're like, I'm ashamed. I don't want to tell anybody. And it gets to the point that you're so scared that you don't even tell anyone that you're pregnant because you're so afraid of it happening again. So I guess my advice would just try to be to go through her mother in regards to it. I know for me, like, my book it's a journal. It's not just me telling my story, because who wants to just read somebody else's story? That's just depressing. But it's a journal to help write out those emotions through that loss. But I mean, she has to have faith. She has the biggest thing, like Barbara said, is the mental health piece. And with that comes the stress. And I just made a post recently, a decrease in stress is an increase in fertility. If we stress during the next pregnancy, we can stress ourselves to another miscarriage. So she has to possibly look into going to therapy to reduce that stress so that she can get through to the next pregnancy, and hopefully that next IVF will be successful.
There it goes. Let's go back to the phone lines. Let's hear from Jamar, then we'll go to Sharon, then Lamont. But Jamar from Baltimore County. Jamar, what's your question or your comment?
Yeah, how you doing, everybody? I really appreciate this topic.
You're welcome.
I wanted to say that traditional Chinese medicine, and particularly when it comes to the herbalism part of it, I've seen them be very effective in this regard in treating infertility for both men and women, as well as being able to hold on to the baby and prevent miscarriages. So I would strongly encourage people to, if they're having these issues, to find a competent traditional Chinese herbal doctor to assist them with their issues. I've personally known people that their situation was so severe such that the doctors told them they'll never be able to have children.
Mm-hmm.
And after getting, once again, competent herbal treatment, they were able to have children normally. So I just want to put that out there to the audience and see what your guests have to say about that.
Sure. Good question. Thank you so much, Jamal, for your patience and for your question. Barbara, can you address that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that as men and women who are, you know, going through this, we certainly are going to try and seek out a lot of different types of therapies. You know, going to traditional medicine, what your guest or what your caller just was talking about, acupuncture and Chinese medicine, and even other things. What I would just tell people is to get as thorough a diagnosis as they can. There are some things that might be a structural problem where, you know, there's maybe you don't even know that, you know, as a woman your fallopian tubes are blocked, or as a guy that, mm-hmm. you know, there's a blockage there and sperm are never going to get where they're supposed to go and the mm-hmm. eggs are never going to get where they're supposed to go. So in those kinds of cases, I don't know how effective the acupuncture and the herbs are going to be. I always kind of jokingly say it's the plumbing's not even working. So but remember, 40% could be unexplained or a combination of men and the woman. And so there may be therapies that are outside the norm that may work for you. You know, in the U.S., we're all about what does the data show? What does the research show? But, you know, I think that you've got to look out for yourself and you've got to look at what you're comfortable with. And you and I talked about this at the top of your show about how long it takes people to even get help. And if that gets you into dealing with it, then I guess that's a good first start.
Absolutely. Let's go to Sharon Tyrell in Gwin Oak, first-time caller. Sharon, what's your question and your comment?
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
I'm just so excited that you guys are talking about this. It's something very important to me because me and my husband have been trying to conceive for the past 5 years. Mm. We had one miscarriage April of 2014, and nothing has happened since. Mm. But my comment would be for those who are, like, struggling with trying to have an outlet for yourself, as far as emotions go for infertility, because unfortunately infertility is an up and down emotional battle. You can be high some days, low some days, and you just may need that outlet. So I agree with Barbara as far as finding a support group or just finding something where you could let yourself go and have that outlet in order for you to kind of be on a stable path, because you can be unstable at some time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for myself, just dealing with watching everyone around me produce children, I know that I needed an outlet, and I, you know, started writing and made a play about it. And I just want to say that it's very important to just have that outlet. And I think my question would be to the people, well, to Barbara and Andrea, what would you suggest to our friends or family that is struggling with infertility, how to encourage that person if they're open enough to tell them about their infertility struggles?
That's a great question, Sharon. Thank you so much. And you know, we hope, you know, that things get well for you and your husband. You know, Andrea, what's your recommendation for that?
Well, first I'm going to give a plug to Sharon. She has her play. It's on Sunday. It's called Chronicles of an Empty Womb, but I'm just saying.
Okay. It's sold out, though.
Chronicles of an Empty Womb, Volume 1, I want to say.
Okay. Fantastic.
So good job to Sharon for stepping out there and agent. Making herself vulnerable to put this out there.
Yeah.
But the advice would be to just support. Listen. Listen. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing you can do is listen. So a lot of times mm-hmm. you don't know what to say. So just shh. Just be quiet. Just listen.
I think sometimes in those moments, people seem like, you know, I understand.
But you don't. Unless you've actually been there. And even if you've been there, everyone's situation is very different.
So not even to even say that can kind of come across.
No, that's fine. That's better than some of the things that I've heard people say to others, such as like, oh, keep trying. At least you have one. At least you were early. Mm. You're still young. Mm. You can try it again. At least you were early. It's probably by far the worst because that was still a baby. So just listening, just being an ear, I think is crucial.
Absolutely. Barbara, did you have any thoughts, any added thoughts on that?
We have actually content on our website that is geared towards friends and family. And it's so awesome because people who are going through this literally send the link to their friends and family and they just say, read this. And so, Andrea is totally right. It's telling that person that you are there for them. You want to support them however they can. You're an ear to listen to, non-judgmental, and that's really it. And you can certainly say to your friend or family member, you know, what can I do to help you, so that they can say how they feel or what they may need. You know, some people may say, can you help me do some research, or can you just be there to listen, and getting people that freedom to just tell you what they need is really important. But as Andrea said, please, please, please don't start any conversation with your words of wisdom, with your advice, what you've read, or, you know, what your, you know, neighbor's cousin's daughter did that, you know, seemed to work for her. That's not helpful.
People like to try to almost one-up your situation. Like, I've thus far, I just self-published my book in January, and so leading up to that, I've heard just people just, it's almost like they want to one-up, like, oh, I know somebody that's had four. Okay, that doesn't make me feel better. Right. At this point in my journey, I've met a woman who had three last year. I've met a woman who had nine before she carried with her only daughter. So, like, I'm not trying to one-up anybody. I'm just sitting over here just somewhat grateful for my situation compared to some of those. I'm just kind of like, ooh, I don't think I should be complaining.
Wow.
So don't bring your stories. Don't bring your neighbor's stories. You can keep
just
those.
Just listen.
Tell your neighbor I said best of luck. Because, I just don't want to hear it. I'm not in that space.
Right, right. Lamont, let's check in from Baltimore. Then finally, Chris. Lamont, thank you for your patience. What's your question or your comment?
Yes, thank you for letting me join in, and I'd like to say hello to everybody. I'm calling because I heard you say that you were surprised that 30% of the men were at fault, and the other comment are about how men are not supportive or would even want to entertain this subject. And the reason I'm calling is because me and my wife were together for like 7 years before we was able to have a child. And come to find out, it was on my end. I had something that they call varicoceles, which is like varicose veins in your testicles.
Very good.
Now, when we went and got checked out before I found out, I was always told, oh, I have good volume. I shouldn't have a problem on my end. So it seemed as if it was a problem on my wife's end. But then I went to another urologist, and he said, oh, no, the problem is you do have great volume, but they're weak. They're being strangled coming out. Mm-hmm. I had a procedure which took like an hour, and he told me in 6 months we should be able to have children, and she was pregnant exactly in 6 months.
Wow.
Well, look at that. So they are strong. So they are strong.
Right. So I want to say to the men out there, get checked out. Be part of this process. Mm. You know, just because you're a man don't mean you're always right.
Mm.
You know, it's a two-way street.
Absolutely.
But getting that second opinion is crucial.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I ask you a question to the caller?
Yeah.
Sure.
When you were told by the urologist that the problem was with you, did you feel that impacted your manliness, your manhood?
No. I mean, I was thankful to hear that because I wanted a child. See, I was
here
all in for the process. It wasn't about, you know, if I can't have a child, it's my fault, you know. And I knew she wanted it just as much as I did. I just looked at it as a blessing to find out that we could have a child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because like you said, 40% is still unknown. And I feel bad for that 40%.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, Lamont, you know, I appreciate you for sharing your story.
Absolutely.
Because I think more guys need to hear that. We got to take the ego out of the situation. And I think that it's important for us to be receptive that, you know what, it could be us. It could be. It's not just a woman. It could be us.
Exactly.
So Lamont, I appreciate you, man, and congratulations to your family. Chris, you got the final word with this. What's your take? Hey, Chris? We don't have Chris?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep, Chris, go ahead.
Oh, okay, sir. Okay, I want to thank you all for having this topic. It's a wonderful topic, and we should discuss it. I did in vitro 18 years ago. We had been married 12 years before we even started to try and have a baby.
Mm.
But then we had complications. I just was not getting pregnant. We both were running. We both were busy working and just living life. And we tried 7 times. So I believe in it. And at the time when I went through it, there were not a lot of Black people doing it. I went to GBMC. I went through at their center. And believe it or not, I felt like I was alone because I really didn't have anyone to talk to or to share it. But I did journalize it. And once we got pregnant through the injections, and my husband was very supportive. He was right there with me. He understood early on in our marriage, I did not want to have children early. I said I wanted to wait. But then by the time I got to my 30s, it became more complicated. So my first child came at 35 through in vitro, through the injections, and we tried 7 times. And this is a great topic to have because it wasn't a lot of support out there when I went through it. And I think that you all are doing a great job as far as bringing this topic up. And I encourage everyone not to give up. Stick in there because it will happen. It happened to us. Then 4 years later, my second child came without the help of in vitro. So this is a great topic. I hope you all have it again.
Yes, ma'am.
And I just say God bless to you all.
Thank you.
Same to you.
Thank you so much, Chris,
for
checking in. Barbara, Andrea, I think I want to thank you both for being on the program. Barbara, how can people get more information about Resolve and the work that you guys are doing?
Yeah, go to resolve.org, resolve.org. We're based here in the D.C. area, but we have support groups all over the country. And, you know, you're here in the Baltimore, D.C. area. Come to Advocacy Day next month, Capitol Hill. Get the support you need. You can find us online, resolve.org.
Absolutely. Barbara Calera, thank you so much for being a part of this and very, very important conversation. And if we can, we'd certainly like to bring you back on to talk a little bit more details about Advocacy Day that you got coming up in next month.
Great. Love to.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Ms. Jones? Yes. Author of the book Carrying It.
Barbara,
I'm
going to be in contact with you, though. Hey, Barbara.
Okay. All right. Okay. Matter of fact, let's keep Barbara on the line for a quick moment, Daryl. So let's keep her on the line. Ms. Jones, how can people get more information about your book and the work you're doing?
So more information on my book, on my shirts that are just statement pieces. That's my new.
Mind your own uterus.
That's my new slogan. For life.
I'm getting
your
shirt.
Uterus.
I'm definitely
I'm gonna get
rocking
you one, and you better make sure that your whole outfit is coordinated.
I am going to
hair and all.
Okay.
And that's on carryingitall.com. Oh wait a minute.
Brian. Carryingitall.com. There we go.
I brought you a book. Look at that.
Thank you so much. Brought us a book as well.
No, you.
Me a book. Thank you. I appreciate that. Carrying
so mind
it
your
all.
Own uterus. Okay.
Yes. All right. Thank you. trying to end the show.
So, but for some of the guys, and just for people who are just kind of like, I don't want to be that broad with it, we do have My Body, My Business.
I could rock that one too. There we go. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing with Inspire. Thank you so much for being a resource for this conversation. And we certainly like to have you back on for another discussion.
Awesome.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for me. I want to thank my dynamic production team, Ms. Mallory Pinkett-Pierre. I want to certainly thank Alex Blanc. I want to thank my production assistants, Daryl, Worldwide West, and Dre Day for making me sound so good. Stay Rotten with us. Up next, we have In the Groove with Miss LaDawn Black, giving you that cool jazz for your evening. And also, make sure that you follow us on all social media platforms at Faraji Muhammad on Facebook. I need some more folks on Twitter and Instagram to follow me. I'm maxed out on Facebook. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter as well as WEAA. As always, never be afraid to challenge what's wrong. Stand for what's right while being yourself in the process. I look forward to talking to you tomorrow for another exciting conversation right here on For the Culture. Here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM. And as always, Baltimore, remember this: do more, but be exceptionally good for the culture. Peace.